long fade. You know, with my camp and with my team that don't get the props. Like, you know, Boza Edwards, he works day in and day out. He runs my gym. My mother, two brothers, my Uncle John, my Uncle Gerald, my Uncle Jeff. People that works behind the scenes that don't get the credit that they really deserve. And I have so many people that's in my staff that help me get to this point, you know. At this level, when you get to the pinnacle, it's not just inside the ring. You gotta have people taking care of things outside the ring as well, so that you're comfortable, so you can go in there and perform like you need to perform. And tonight was just another stepping stone. We still got 5 more fights, and we'll see where we go from there. Like I said before, you know, as far as in the Miguel Cotto fight, I felt like I got hit with shots I shouldn't have got hit with. So I had to bring the defense master back, my father. And I hurt my hand. I think I hurt my hand midway through the fight. I think it was around I'll start coming on strong. My father told me, it's time for you to walk to him now. You took your time, you kept your composure, you boxed smart, you hit him with some big shots, and now he's wore down. He said, now it's time for you, you know, to go forward. And then I started hitting him with a lot of big shots, but I ended up hurting my hand, so I came back. I wasn't using my hand the next round. I think it was the 10th round. My dad said, did you hurt your hand? I said, yeah, but I didn't want to tell him I hurt my hand. So I said, you know what, forget it. You know, I was built for this. So I kept using it, you know, the best way I could. But like I said, you guys been a great audience. The media, you guys done a tremendous job. And Showtime, CBS, you guys done everything I asked of you. And they don't stop now. We're going to keep moving on. We're going to continue to stay positive, continue to keep believing, and continue to work hard. What else can I say? You guys have been great.
What more can he say? What more can we say? Mayday, mayday. Welcome back, everybody. It's that time of the month. It's the Cypher Boxing Radio Show, K-Chung Radio, AM 1630, Chinatown, Los Angeles, above the FUS 78. Cypher Boxing back in effect. And we started off with the post-press conference to the biggest fight of the year so far. Floyd Money Mayweather Jr. put his welterweight title against the interim champion, Robert the Ghost Guerrero, at the MGM Grand Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. Packed to the gills. They say for that weekend, Mayday weekend, it brings in about 250,000 people and generates anywhere from $100 to $250 million for that city, for that weekend. So it's a big time event. It's a big time card. no one bigger than Floyd Mayweather in the sport, and we go right into that fight. It was a fight that was hyped by a new machine this time for Floyd Mayweather. He just signed a 6-fight contract worth $200 million to fight exclusively for Showtime Cable Network, and this marks a shift from HBO, who brought him since he was turning pro in 1996, all the way through the Pretty Boy Floyd years, from his divorce from Bob Arum to joining up with Golden Boy Promotions and becoming the pay-per-view star, the villain of the sport, the highest profile athlete in America. Floyd Mayweather Jr. starts on Showtime, really late, raises the level of Showtime as far as a boxing network, a boxing hub, and it brings the biggest star in the sport over. They had their own show called All Access, much like the 24/7 on HBO. Not as well produced, but it was still a behind-the-scenes look at the greatest fighter in the sport, Mayweather Jr. What we got to see, though, was his... And like all of these, we know what Mayweather brings to the table, but this is to really showcase the challenger, the one that's trying to knock him off the throne. And this time that challenger was Robert Guerrero. Robert Guerrero came in, winner of 14 straight fights, a man of a great story where he basically left sports altogether to help his wife through chemotherapy. She eventually got a bone marrow transplant, is in remission as far as her cancer is concerned. He came back, won a championship in her name, and has been really putting people away with a surprise victory over Andre Berto in his initial fight at 147. He jumped two weight classes. The Ghost was usually a lightweight guy, 135. He ended up jumping two weight classes to fight a solid 147-pounder in Andre Berto and proved his mettle that fight by closing up both eyes of the Haitian American and pulling out the unanimous decision victory in what many thought was a signature performance by Robert Guerrero. And Robert Guerrero had been calling Mayweather out quite constantly the last couple of years, and I was one of the people that were surprised that he actually ended up getting the fight. It is Mexican, Cinco de Mayo, so it's a Mexican holiday, so getting a Mexican to fight against Floyd Mayweather seemed to be the priority for the team money, and so they got that to happen, and Roberto Guerrero was the guy he's from California. He's about 30 years old, welterweight now, was a lightweight, four-time champion in two weight classes. Most of those championships are interim championships, but they're championships nonetheless. He comes in here really talking a big game and known as a pressure fighter. And as many people know, that many people think that's the key to beating Floyd Mayweather. Some of the only times he's really looked distressed in a fight is because of a effective pressure applied to him. And that's what many people thought they would see coming out. Robert Guerrero really started off very well. Floyd Mayweather looked like he was going to be a mobile target, kind of judging his distance very quickly, but Robert Guerrero was not looking at all like he was tight, like these light, like he was going to wither under the lights. He came in there relaxed. He was giving Mayweather quite a stare during the fighter introductions, and really kept that going through the first couple of rounds, where he was very competitive by really utilizing a nifty counter to the always all universe big time punch from Mayweather, his straight right, that lead right. And what Robert Guerrero was doing good in that first couple of rounds was really timing that lead right with a left counter that was connecting to the midsection of Floyd Mayweather. And it was something that really was a new wrinkle to an opponent using against Mayweather. I haven't seen that counter before. It's been there for every opponent he's fought, and Guerrero was throwing that every time he saw the lead right coming. So sometimes he would eat the punch, but definitely the left counter he was delivering in response was the more telling of the blows landed. Mayweather, however, went into the third round, made the adjustment as he always does, this time a little quicker than usual, and then just went on to dominate the whole fight from there on. Mayweather, always the tactician, in his last fight against Cotto, it looked like he didn't use his legs as much, was going to be a little bit more stationary target, but he reconnected with his father, as you heard in the press conference, and what it did was put more of an emphasis on his defense and using his mobility and athleticism to get in and out. And it really put everybody on notice in the welterweight division that Floyd Mayweather does not have bad legs. His legs are there. His legs are there for him to use as he wants and as he pleases. He really had Robert Guerrero, the younger man, swinging and missing badly throughout from the third round on, and really not asserting himself or his game plan very well and losing confidence as the time went on. He was a game challenger, but what Floyd Mayweather did was neutralize everything he brought to the table by making those minor adjustments. Him and his father don't really give a lot when you listen to their exchanges between the rounds. So Floyd Mayweather is doing this on the fly, off the cuff, off the top of his head, and he's like a computer in there. Once he gets enough data, he's gonna spit out a formula to really match whatever's coming at him and apply the greater intensity and will and take over the rhythm and the pace of the match. And Floyd did just that. It looked like he had Robert Guerrero hurt in the eighth round. Guerrero wasn't really throwing any punches back, really trying to find his space, trying to get his second win. Guerrero weathered the storm, but still did not give anybody any worries as to what the outcome would be. The only time I saw Mayweather really not engage that much was in the 12th round, where Mayweather really showed why he's a winner. He goes in there and he's not the most exciting fighter. The guy fights to win. He comes from an Olympic background and he's got that presence about him in the ring where he never puts himself in a position to lose, be them exchanges in or out of the ring, as you can see from his press conference exchanges with his opponent. So it was another signature Mayweather win. Something that only bad news that came out of the fight was the fact that he broke his hand during the fight. It sounded like he broke his right hand. He said it hurt. Hopefully it's just swelling, because we do want to see him back in the ring by September, which would be the first time in over a decade that he fought with only 4 month layoff. But it was definitely a sweet dream to have before he broke his hand. But now after he broke his hand, it's looking more like a December comeback for Mayweather. But we'll see. But what he did show was that he's still the tactical king, the defensive wizard, and with his father in his corner, it looks like he's definitely going to be the man that hits and does not get hit, applying the sweet science wherever he goes. Money Mayweather did his thing. The opening match on that bill, on what was billed as the Mayday card, was really what stole the show, and that was Abner Mares making his first fight appearance at featherweight against his promotion mate, Daniel Ponce de Leon. These both guys fight out of California, Southern California to be exact, and they both fight under the same promotion, Espinoza Boxing, and so they know each other, they're friends, but they put that friendship aside to go in and do what they do for a living, and that's punch each other in the face. And what was surprising right off the bat, one thing I didn't really expect to see, was a thinking Abner Mares, a guy that went in there and basically hunted down his last fighter, the brilliant Anselmo Moreno, the counterpuncher that has all the skill in the world, just got beat by Abner Mares by getting hunted down and really demolished. A marauder is what I would classify Abner Mares in his last fight. But what I didn't expect was him to come out and really look like a boxer puncher, like he was thinking, like he was looking for the counter. Daniel Ponce de Leon did not seem like he was confused by the strategy, but it threw everybody that was watching the fight for a loop. But these guys got right into it. Very, very smart exchanges, very crafty moves, subtle hints and feints. But immediately what I saw was that Abner Mares brought his strength up to the featherweight division, which is the 126-pound limit. But he also was faster, and his combinations were blinding. In the second round, he caught Daniel Ponce de Leon with one of these punches. He did a feint like he was going to throw a jab, didn't throw a jab at all, and actually threw a lead left hook. This stunned and really caught Daniel Ponce de Leon between punches. That minor hesitation was all that punch needed to land squarely on the chin. And as always, with a lot of knockdowns, it's from a constant pressure. And so there was another punch in that combination, a right overhand that really caught and pushed over the buckle dance Daniel Ponce de Leon for the first knockdown of what was a pressure cooker fight to begin with, but what turned into a rousing brawl soon afterwards. But never did Daniel Ponce de Leon assert himself as the stronger man, since he's been at 126 forever. Forever Daniel Ponce de Leon has been there. Even gave Adrian Broner a run for his money at 130 when he moved up. So it was kind of surprising to see that Abner Mares was matching him with strength, and not only that, beating him with the speed. Ponce de Leon did have some good rounds after that second round knockout. Admittedly, the fourth round looked like he was turning the tables, gaining some momentum. But as we are coming to find out, Abner Mares is a pound for pound talent, and he made these adjustments in between rounds, during rounds, that countered everything that Daniel Ponce de Leon would be successful with. And soon enough, his successes were short-lived to the point where he was not winning at all. He was getting demoralized by the stronger, by the bigger, by the younger, fresher opponent in Abner Morris, and eventually succumbed to a ninth round TKO to his banner mate. Abner Morris out of Hawaiian Gardens, California. You know, Hawaiian Gardens has something to be proud of in Abner Morris, and he's definitely showing himself to be the class of the, not only the featherweights, but it looks like he could go further from here to see what he can do to get the best fights. You know, I read a good article by Steve Kim of Max Boxing, one of my favorite columnists in the boxing sports. And he basically said, you know, sometimes a lot of what this buildup as far as this new generation of boxing superstars is really based on their potential and the hype surrounding them. And that hasn't worked so well for Abner Morris. But what Steve Kim was pointing out is that the guy just wins, and he wins against quality opposition. And sometimes you gotta take that assessment and really give the guy his due. And once you consider that he just took out a stellar featherweight in Daniel Ponce de Leon that's been there forever, just came from winning the Showtime tournament at 118, went up to 122, beat the best guy there, called out Nonito Donaire, who eventually turned him down to fight somebody else that he really shouldn't have. You know, it leads me to believe that Abner Morris is the man to beat at that weight. You got Michael Garcia fighting Juan Manuel Lopez in Puerto Rico later this month. So that'll kind of square off who the big time guy is going to be for Abner Morris at 126. But it's definitely not, out of the question that he's going to stake his claim as the man to beat. And the man who used to be that guy that we all know and love is Nonito Donaire. And basically what Nonito Donaire ran into was somebody that was a little bigger than the hype. It was somebody that brought skills, and it was a fight that I saw with my wife, and that was the Nonito Donaire versus Rigo Rigondeaux.
A bit disappointing was when we were watching that. I mean,
why were you disappointed?
Because the fact that, you know, there was so much hype with Donaire, you know, thinking that, you know, he's this great fighter.
Right, maybe. What did you know about Donaire before?
You know, that he was going to be a successor to
Manny Pacquiao.
Manny Pacquiao. And, you know, it's just definitely disappointing because, I was ready for this fight. And I'm like, okay, he's gonna bring it on. And he definitely, it was boring. It was a boring fight to me as far as, and I understand that it's probably matching of skills, and they were being really careful and making sure, you know, that they were going to be calculated and that they were going to make it through this fight. And, you know, I thought Donaire was really fired up and ready to go. Finding out that his opponent was actually probably the better of the two.
At everything, right?
Exactly.
Like, did you see any advantage that Nonito showed in that fight that was greater than what his opponent brought?
Not at all. I think it felt like, Donaire was just, he was being too careful. He wasn't showing his skills. And I think his opponent just got the better of him.
And it's my fault. And it's my fault why you had such a high opinion. I talk about him all the time.
You were like,
I talk about him all the time. He was just named the Fighter of the Year. So I was not alone in, you know, my hype of this guy. And, you know, what I felt coming into this fight was that Nonito Donaire was the proven professional commodity. The guy has shown that he's athletically more able to do whatever he wants to do in that ring, the smarter fighter, and I'm all about intelligence, and I felt that he was going to be the smarter fighter coming in. No doubt, Guillermo Rigondeaux's amateur background did give me some hesitancy in leaning so much toward Nonito Donaire, but, you know, it's amateur fights, you know, it's a point thing. So when you come to the professional ranks, a lot of Cubans don't know how to make that transition and how to have that style that really turns into a great professional career. Rigondeaux, no doubt, was undefeated up to that point, but had shown that if he got touched, he could go down. He showed that he didn't have the biggest chin. And so to me, Donaire was going to test that chin. And Donaire was going to show everything that he had showed in previous fights and really just corral this guy in and maybe knock him out early, but definitely have a wide points win. And what happened was everything I thought was wrong. Like, completely wrong. Donaire was dominated intellectually. You know, athletically speaking, he was not as fast. He was not as strong, but he wasn't. It wasn't a glaring disparity between the two fighters. So, you know, with a little bit of intelligence, he could have applied himself in different ways to really use what he could and maybe make him his timing the better of the keys. But even that fell out. And by the end of the fight, he was just following Brigando around like a lost child during the fight, and it was a very sad display from what was the fighter of the year last year. You know, the irony is he just received the award 2 days prior to the fight. He had already been exalted like he was going to be the next Manny Pacquiao. I thought he was better than Manny Pacquiao, but this lets you know what matchmaking is all about. There's no reason he should have took this fight, but he did, and he should have stepped up to the plate. It's obvious he was overconfident. Him and his corner are obviously not on the same, you know, page as far as making sure they get the correct training, knowing who they're fighting, and being able to apply the game plan effectively to each individual opponent. And they came in thinking this was going to be another day at the office, and Rigondeau just was the one that came in and did his work with his briefcase and ate lunch, and then that lunch was named Nonito Donaire, and then he picked up his briefcase, picked up his belt, and left with Nonito Donaire's mojo. And I hope Nonito Donaire takes a long, hard look at the way he presents himself into fights. I believe he will definitely be the better from this, but he's got to be honest about his shortcomings that he presented in this fight, and he's got to be honest about what happened and really have the grace to be truly, you know, like applying himself next time and being humbled by this performance, because this was a humbling performance. It's something I never thought I'd see happen to Donaire, who I thought was past this kind of performance. And what we ran into was a man that underestimated his competition and overestimated his ability as a performer and as a professional. He really didn't give his fans the respect he should have. And
you know, as I'm learning, excuse me, watching boxing is, you know, they have their different styles, and depending on what their background, where they come from, like Rigondeau, you know, he has that style from, I guess, background from being Cuban. They teach him how to spin. That's the one thing that I thought was interesting, as far as, so meaning that when they're punching, they're wrapping around the boxer's head, and then, you know, kind of giving right, him a little spin, right?
To spin out from being in front of the fighter.
Yeah, and I thought that was interesting, because that's a kind of, you know, skill style that, you know, can help them, right?
I mean, it helped him in that fight. He was corralling, he was controlling Nonito Donaire, and the ref wasn't doing anything about it. You're not really allowed to touch your opponent that way, like...
And the referee kept on, you know, making sure that he was, you know, paying attention to that. But he kept going and he kept doing it. Maybe it helped Rigondeau.
It definitely, everything he used was to his advantage. And in the end, he took a rousing, unanimous decision, ass-whooping and humbling victory to over the overmatched. I never thought I would say that. The overmatched Nonito Donaire. And after the fight, you know, Nonito Donaire was talked to by Max Kellerman, and this is what the exchange was after the fight.
Hey. Bueno.
Nonito, what happened tonight?
First of all, I just want to apologize. So, you know, I didn't really feel his power until that last round. And, you know, I just, I got too carried away. I wanted to take him out so bad, and I fell in love with that. But again, you know, I only have much respect for Rigondeau for a beautiful boxing that he gave me. You know, again, we just got to come out and then go back to the drawing board.
You're at a point in your life. You have a baby on the way. You move into a big house in Las Vegas. You're making more than $1 million a fight. You're a big star. Maybe as a Filipino-American, the guy to take over from Pacquiao as he gets older. Is it an issue? You said it's a vulnerable moment for you. Did that play in here?
Well, there's a lot of pressure. Aside from that, not only that I'm going to be out for with my baby, but to be honest with you, for the last three fights, I mean, I'm not taking away anything from Rigondeau, but I needed the surgery on my shoulder. I tore my ligament for about three years, but I'm telling you, watch. No shoot. Like I said, I'm gonna do it. I'm giving everything to Rigondeau, but that's what I'm going to do is go back to drawing board, get the surgery fixed. But again, you know, he played a beautiful, beautiful boxing game, and it was my mistake for not changing up.
No fighter is ever 100% going into a fight, so fans can hear that as an excuse, not intended that way by you. Are you a victim of your own success in a way? You've caught a lot of top fighters. You've obliterated them. And so you haven't had to refine your skills maybe enough for a guy like this who's almost as mythical status as an amateur legend and has done so well as a pro and is such a skillful fighter.
Again, you know, we thought that we can get him. I didn't do my job, which was to throw jab and go on the left side. But I just wanted to take him out. And I fell for that success. I fell for that power, that vulnerability that he had. And, there's no excuse. He beat me tonight. I thought it was a very, very close fight. But, we got to go back to drawing board and be better. And then that's the thing is be better from this point on. You know, we didn't disappoint. We gave it all we got, you know, and that's the only thing that I can give with my trainer. They're proud of me. Give it all I got. That's all I got. And I want to thank everybody again.
Finally, do you want to get right back in there with him? Is this something where you want to get the surgery, fight the tune-up maybe, and then look for it? Or as a competitor, are you thinking right away you want to get right back in with Rigondeaux?
We want to go up in the division now because I was struggling to make this weight. But we would like to rematch with him. You know, we made a mistake and we didn't do nothing. I didn't study, and that was a mistake that I did. Again, I fell for the, I can make this happen if I really go in there. Like I said, I never studied the fight, and I should have.
Thanks, champ. Jim,
what a candid admission.
Well, it's candid, but, you know, thank you for saying that you did not study for a big-time fight that everybody, you know, was rooting for you about. You know, that doesn't win you fans. When you show, you're lackluster and you didn't prepare, you can't say that, you know, you did your best. You know what I mean? Because your best was not your best because you didn't perform up to your abilities because you did no practicing, and then Rigondeaux beat you up and I lost money. But Nonito Donaire should come back.
Yeah,
Cyberboxing.
Yeah, that was my dinner.
Cyberboxing will be touting your next fight, and my wife will be there to talk shit to the TV if you perform like you did again. So
exactly.
It is what it is, and we move on from there, as Donaire should. We move on to what was a really great, you know, this is a great month. The last month, April, gave us some great fights, and one was a particular weekend where there was actually three fights. Three big fights, and this is what we're gonna be seeing, you know, from HBO and Showtime. They're not gonna be messing around. They're gonna be attacking each other, and they're gonna be coming with cards that have great fighters fighting each other that are gonna be on the same nights. You know, a lot of people were moaning about this and bitching about it, but I think it's great. In this world of DVRs and different ways of watching other fights, you don't really need to see be there for the fight to make sure that you catch it. But this was not one of those weekends because it was a crazy weekend that included the middleweight champion of the world, Maravilla, Sergio Martinez from Argentina. And his fight was actually going to be the first fight that was going to happen. It was going to be happening against Englishman Martin Murray. And because of a huge rainstorm, because of a very big storm that was happening out there, they were going to close the stadium. So his fight ended up coming on 2 hours earlier. Since it was happening on the same day as the Amir Khan Danny Garcia card, this is basically how it's going to go down. Amir Khan fight in England, 9 hours ahead of us, starts first. Then after that came the Danny Garcia fight. And then after that came Amir Khan. Then came the Sergio Martinez. Then the Danny Garcia. So you're talking about three big major cards. Since they were in different time zones across the world, where boxing is huge, you were able to see them like this big smorgasbord, like Super Bowl box weekend. And that's where I hunkered down in front of my computer and watched the some great, great fights. The first one being the Amir Khan fight. Now, Amir Khan, known of the suspect chin and the lightning hands, was the first fight of the night. He came with knowledge that he was working with Virgil Hill. Virgil Hunter. He's the trainer of Andre Ward, defensive machine in the super middleweight ranks. So they wanted to apply those same tactics to Amir Khan's toolkit and wanted to upgrade the skill set of the Pakistani Briton. He comes into the fight. I saw his last fight that was at the Los Angeles Sports Arena. He fought a game challenger in Carlos Molina that that touched him a bunch of times. Amir Khan did not look worse for the wear from any of those exchanges, did not look on shaky legs at all, showed all the quickness, but to me did not show the defensive upgrade yet. It's going to be a slow process, but I didn't see it. He did pull out the win against a game challenger, but he was a class above. And coming into this fight against Julio Diaz, it's something I also felt. I felt he was a class above. He ended up coming in, showing the quicker hands, but and really showing a very good rhythm of getting in and out, using his length, using the jab, going straight to the body, the amazing hand speed of Amir Khan is what you always want to witness, and it's what's a signature for this light welterweight fighter. And he came in showing that, but what he was also doing was not staying in the pocket too long and admiring his work. He was jumping in, hitting with a couple of 1-2s, jumping out, using his left hook beautifully, but definitely getting out of the way. However, Julio Diaz was not to be denied, and like every Amir Khan since the beginning of his career, it's an exciting fight because of his skill set, but at the same time, at the fact that his chin is not the most sturdy of his traits, so when it gets touched, he can get wobbly, and when he gets wobbly, it can look like Humpty Dumpty and all the House of Cards or whatever kind of analogy you want to make is going to come tumbling down, and that's what you watch. It's this anticipation that something might land, and if it does, everything's going to get interesting, and again, Amir Khan delivers because Julio Diaz touches him, knocks him down early in the fight, and really puts everybody on notice that, again, Amir Khan has to deal with the adversity, and will he come out? Diaz, when he first got him on shaky legs, looked like he was going to be able to get him out of there, but Amir Khan learns to hold, learns to not get too macho and fire back, and shows the composure that looks to be the first part of his evolution as a fighter, as far as what he's learning in the gyms in Oakland, California, as much as what his exchanges are between him and his new trainer, Virgil Hunter. And that's what jumped out glaringly as a new wrinkle in Amir Khan's game is that composure. He gained it. He applied his skill throughout. Definitely testy exchanges. Julio Diaz had him on newborn doe legs many times after that, but never did Amir Khan stumble and fail to get to the end of the round, and he did that enough times to get to the end of the fight. He ends up winning the fight with a unanimous decision victory, and all props to the new composure shown by Amir Khan, but he definitely showed that he still got those whiskers to give you like nightmares if you're a part of his team, and you're gonna put him out there into the shark tank that is the welterweight division. You've got Lucas Matisse, you got Danny Garcia, who already showed him the exit. You've got Tim Bradley could come down to 140. You've got Peterson down there. You got Devin Alexander, who went up to 147, but he could come down. So there's a bunch of brawlers. Kendall Holt, don't even think about that at this moment. But Amir Khan is a draw. He filled that stadium up. I believe there was over 20,000 people for the fight, for Amir Khan's fight. So the guy is beloved in his home country of Britain, and he was shown on Showtime. I believe it was Showtime. Because it's part of Golden Boy Promotions, and he showed that he could make it out, weather the storm, showed a new composer. Julio Diaz, who used to be the flavor of the month earlier in his career, did disappoint, and maybe set himself up with some definite TV spots in the future because he's an exciting fighter, and he grinded it out, and he almost scored a huge upset. But in the end, Amir Khan comes through, and this was his post-fight interview with Showtime Sports.
It was everything we'd expect from you. It was heart, it was passion, and it was so, so dramatic.
It was, you know, he's a tough guy. He's been in many world title fights. We trained very hard for this fight. We knew he was going to be tough. We knew who was, you know, going to come in and want to win this fight. But, you know, it was great. It was a great performance in there. He was tough. He was good in front of me all the way through the fight. And, you know, I can listen to Virgil in the corner, and we got the win.
When you were down in the fourth, how much did you have to fight your instinct to get back in and work on the jab and try and give yourself the recovery time to get back in the fight?
No, you know what? I remember exactly everything that happened in that room. I mean, I was off balance, and he caught me while I was off balance, and I mean, I couldn't get my stance back. I went down, and I thought, you know what? He kept rushing back at me as soon as I was back up again, and that's why I kept moving to recompose myself. But you know, that's what happens. I mean, they're little things that we're going to work on when we go back in the gym.
It's been a journey for you since you last fought in the UK, and I know you got a massive reception from the crowd. What was it like performing back home for the first time in 2 years?
It was amazing. You know, I want to thank my UK fans. I mean, they've always been supportive, they've always been great, and it was just awesome to come back home, you know, to put on a performance, and it was a great performance. I mean, who knew come to win? And I mean, you know, I was happy with the way the crowd supported me and they were behind me all the way.
The last three rounds, were you feeling the pressure? Because it looked as though at one stage he was tiring, but he just kept on coming back.
That's how, you know, Julio was tough. I mean, he's a tough, tough Mexican fighter, and he wouldn't take a step back. I mean, these Mexicans are tough. That's why he's two-time world champion. He's got a lot of experience, and he knew what to do in there. But, you know, we just stuck to the game plan with Virgil, and we just kept going and kept going.
Let's have a... I mean, we've waited 2 years to see you fight in the UK. Is this the last time we've seen you fight over here, or is there an option for you to come back again in the future?
I wish it's not the last time. I wish I could keep going back and fighting for my home fans. I mean, it's amazing to fight in England, but it just depends on the fighters out there. I mean, most of the world champions are in America. I don't think they'd want to travel. But you know, I'm going to keep on trying to get the fight back in the UK. But I just want to say thanks to Julio Diaz because he put on a great performance. And if this is my last fight in the UK, what a fight it was.
Well, it was an absolutely enthralling contest, Amir. It's been brilliant to see you back in the UK. Thanks for coming and good luck for your next fight.
Thank you very much.
All right, so for you guys who are like me, where I'm still learning and trying to break down these weight classes, this is some good information for you. So featherweight is up to 126 pounds. Featherweight is up to 130. We have the junior welterweight up to 140. We do have the super welterweight at 154. Then we have the light heavyweight at 175, cruiserweight up to 200 pounds, and then the heavyweight over 175 pounds.
Yeah, you know, that's something that even people that have followed boxing a long time, they mix up. So it's good information. There's also the middleweights that are 160 pound limit. That's who Sergio Martinez is, and that's what we'll be discussing next. He is the next fight in my Super Saturday. After we went from England, then we traveled all the way over to Argentina for the next fight, and that was the middleweight championship of the world by the Argentinian Sportsman of the Year, Sergio Martinez. And he's the guy that came in and he was facing Martin Murray, a legitimate 160 pounder. To give you some background on Sergio Martinez, he was a natural 154 pounder. That's a super welterweight. Damara was giving you guys an idea of. And what happened is he ran out of challenges there. Paul Williams was down there. He didn't have any comp that wanted to come up and fight him, so he ended up going up to the middleweights at 160, and he's been there ever since. He's a smaller middleweight, but what he lacks in size, he makes up for athleticism, accuracy, and on-point technique as far as the way he applies his punches. He sits on them, and he gets a lot of torque, a lot of power on it, and it's a great thing to see him apply this against bigger men, and he ended up doing that to Julio Cesar Chavez in a super fight prior to this, and one where Chavez got pinged on being high, well, having marijuana in his blood, but it didn't stop him from getting a knockdown of Sergio Martinez in the 11th round that almost pulled off a big upset, because Martinez was whooping Junior's ass the whole fight, but ended up getting up from that knockdown, weathering the storm, and fighting himself out of it, and really inserting himself into the hearts and minds of his countrymen who voted him the athlete of the year of their country, really over the biggest player in soccer, you know, Lionel Messi. So to beat out Lionel Messi as the Argentinian Sportsman of the Year shows you how big boxing is to the people of Argentina. And Sergio Martinez leads a big, very worthy class of excellent fighters coming out of that country. He comes into the fight, lightning, storm, everything, but after being named it was a huge, huge deal in Argentina. 50,000 people showed up for this fight. All of his countrymen were there to see Maravilla, the middleweight champion of the world, and the build-up, the ring entrances was worthy of a Mayweather promotions, in that it was worthy, really, of an Olympic celebration. So it's in a soccer stadium. fireworks going off all over the place. You know, it was the all of the bells and whistles that you would attach to some a coming out party for the man on the throne, and that was Sergio Martinez. And he comes in facing a man by the name of Martin Murray that wasn't overwhelmed by the scene. You know, when you get to this point, and it's something that some of the broadcasters were talking about leading up to the fight, is you want to keep everything as routine as possible, because in the end, it's just like the Hoosier when he took him out to see that the, you know, the rim there is 10 feet, the same as the rim that they practice on where they're from is the same as the rim in a stadium with 50,000 people. And that's what Martin Murray looked like he was thinking, like, this ring is the same as the ring in his gym, is the same as the ring that he started off fighting in, and it's the same there today, because he came in there relaxed. He came in there looking a lot like Madonna, just aesthetically, but he was relaxed. He looked like he had a good sweat on him, and he awaited the middleweight champ, who came in with all the pomp and circumstance of a coronation, really. And Sergio Martinez went right to work, doing his feints, doing what he does, and that's hands down athletic boxing, mobile boxing, and pinpoint accurate punching, you know, with power behind him. But one thing I saw right off the bat was he wasn't sitting on his punches as normal, but he was as quick as ever, and to be mobile too, and a little bit mobile too. Martin Murray was really having a high, tight defense, so he was trying to keep his hands up, and so he kept his hands up there for as long as he could, and really gave up a lot of rounds before he started applying himself in the middle of the fight. And that's where everything got interesting. He scored a knockdown, and he started pulling off rounds pretty heavy-handedly. He was definitely the harder puncher, the stronger man, and I don't believe that Martinez had all of his health back, because he wasn't looking like the mobile fighter that we're used to. But what he didn't have in mobility, he made up for in craftiness as a veteran, using every single trick in the book to go out there and try to get each round. Going into the championships round, it was still up in the air, but I gave Martin Murray the last two rounds, and I had the fight going up in the air in the last round, but Martin Murray just wasn't up to the challenge, and I saw Sergio Martinez take that round, and he eventually took the fight to the glorious raucous, you know, appraisal of, and applause of the Argentinian crowd. But it was very close. Some people could have scored it against Sergio Martinez. I definitely ran into some of my boxing friends that did. But at the same time, Sergio Martinez showed some grit and determination and pulled off that last round and fought like he wanted to keep his championship. And when you're fighting at home in front of that many people, you should know as an opponent, you got to go in there and try to steal the show. And Murray had it there for the taking and just couldn't apply himself. Sergio Martinez talked with Max Kellerman after the fight, and this was what he had to say.
Sergio, congratulations. Before we even get to the fight, what was this like in front of 45,000 cheering Argentines?
Lo más espectacular de toda mi vida, lo más maravilloso, lo más hermoso que pude haber vivido toda mi vida.
It was the most fantastic thing, the most marvelous thing I could have ever experienced as a sportsman.
Did you feel added pressure to put on a show for these fans, fighting with your hands down from the very first round?
No siento presión, la presión a mí me hace sentir más fuerte. De hecho, hoy subí a divertirme, y así lo hice. Me golpeé la mano muy fuerte, la mano izquierda, me duele muchísimo. Una fractura.
No pressure. I feel the pressure. I enjoy pressure. And I wanted to have a great show, but today I hurt my hand, I hurt my left hand, and I might be broken.
What does it mean, do you think, that for the second consecutive fight, you kept the middleweight championship of the world by doing what you had to do in the 12th and final round?
Es quedarme un poquito más en la memoria de todos y escribir un poquito más fuerte mi nombre en la historia del boxeo mundial.
It burns my name in people's memory, and it makes my name even greater in boxing history.
Did you think the fight was up for grabs in the 12th round?
No, sabía que yo iba ganando, a pesar de que me dolía mucho la mano, a pesar de que sabía que caía en el octavo, sé que iba ganando la pelea con claridad.
No, I knew that I was winning. I knew that I was winning clearly. My head was hurting since the eighth round.
Okay, you're 38 years old, and you've finally become a big superstar. But you're coming off knee surgery. You hurt your hand again tonight. It was a very rough fight. What is in your immediate future?
El futuro es trabajar para recuperarme, pero las superestrellas somos así, nos recuperamos siempre ante todo.
We have to work to get better, but the superstars are like that. We always get better against any odds.
Thanks, champ, and congratulations once again.
Thank you, and viva Argentina.
Thank you, and viva Argentina. Cedro Martinez comes out, gives it a gritty performance. Wasn't as fireworks as he thought it would be, but he came in and delivered nonetheless with the victory. Max Kellerman with the post-fight interview for HBO Sports, who really has to rely on Sergio Martinez to be their number one guy after the defection, really, of Golden Boy Promotions over to the Showtime Network. And, you know, the Showtime Network is where we go with Golden Promotions. Golden Boy Promotions with Danny Garcia and Zab Judah, which ended and anchored my night, my Super Saturday night of boxing. So we go all the way to Brooklyn, New York, Barclays Center, home of the Brooklyn Nets. And where we see Danny Garcia take on Zab Judah in what turned out and really was to me a coming out party for Danny Garcia. The guy has taken some lumps, saying that he's fought faded guys. The only big win he has against Amir Khan, but the guy just fights who's in front of him, and his team has developed him and matched him correctly. And this was another way of him going up the ladder. Zab Judah, the greatest six-round fighter in the history of the sport, but one that just never lived up to the potential that really surpassed Mayweather. He overshadowed Mayweather the late 90s as the man that was going to be the great. But that ended with a fantastic knockout by Costa Zou, and then the eventual loss to Mayweather in the melee that happened there. But Zab Judah, always a tough opponent, but came in really not winning anybody's confidence that he was going to put in a 12-round fight. And seeing Danny Garcia early, it looked like that he was going to be the stronger, better fighter. What I saw most was that Garcia was using his right hand like a cobra, and he was using it as a weird lead that was really throwing off Judah and holding his lethal left hand at bay. And it was great training by his father, great communication by them, showed the smarts of Danny Garcia, and he was really using it as a sweeping hook to the body and a sweeping hook to the head, and some lead rights in there too. So it just shows that this kid is willing to adjust and really put in some cool fights. He ends up running into a rough patch in the eighth round. He knocked down Judah, but Judah immediately came back and surprisingly applied himself in rounds 8 through 11, won every single round to make it a competitive fight, but just didn't have enough to pull out the victory. He needed that knockout in the final round. Danny Garcia pulls it out, really with a workmanlike pound-for-pound type fight from Danny Garcia, and something that you got to give him props for. He went into the Brooklyn man's hometown, and he took it, and he took it decisively. But this was a very, very, very anger-filled buildup of Brooklyn and Philadelphia, both proud traditions as far as boxing is concerned. And Danny Garcia's dad, Angel Garcia, kind of added fuel to the fire. The guy is not he's not one to like mince words, and so he threw him out there, and it added a big undercurrents of animosity. But immediately after fight, everything was all good, and this is what Danny Garcia had to say to the Showtime crew after the fight was over. He did pull out the unanimous decision victory, and he stays as the top guy at 140.
Guy in his hometown, I knew he had a lot of pride behind him. I knew he was never going to give up, and I had to beat the hometown guy in his hometown. But you know, first of all, sorry, I forgot. I want to thank God. I want to thank Al Heyman, my dad, and Golden Boy and Showtime for this opportunity.
You were able to dominate with the power punches, and then you knocked him down in the eighth round. But rounds 10, 11, and 12,
yes,
Zab Judah came back, and he stunned you, he alarmed you, and he won those rounds.
Yeah.
What changed?
He's a crappy veteran with power. We knew that. He was a good shot, I think, about 11th. He was left hand. He swung me around. I wasn't looking. He was uppercut, and that kind of took my, you know, shook me up a little bit. But I'm a true champion, and I got to fight through a storm in order to be a champion, and I'll do that tonight.
Now, you've beaten Khan, you've beaten Morales, you now beat Judah. Was Judah the best fighter you have faced?
Yeah, Judah, no doubt. Judah is the most craftiest and the strongest guy I've fought so far.
Let's take a look at that knockdown, if you can have you look right here at the monitor, Danny, in the eighth round. He hit you with a good left. And then you came back right away with the right. Tell us what happened.
Oh, he threw a left, and I just counted right back. Right on
him? So did you feel as though you'd be able to follow up and put him away, or did you, or was it just a flat shot?
No, I knew he throws a lot of power with the left, so I was trying to stay on my ground and fire right back and land it.
Danny, you were very effective tonight without using your jab much. Is that something you're going to have to start to use a little bit more?
Oh, man, I can respect his jab. He took the jab away. You know, my gameplay was to come in here and use the jab, but he was stepping around. He was crafty. He took my jab away, so I had to use what I had and squeeze it out.
There was such bad blood between you two before this fight, particularly a lot of trash talking. It spilled over. Your dad was involved. Is that gone now?
Oh, yeah. To me, it's gone. It's respect. As you can see, there's a lot of bad blood. I got cuts. He got cuts. We came here. We gave the people in Brooklyn a great show. I want to thank you guys for coming out, Philadelphia, Brooklyn.
That was Danny Garcia giving props where props, you know, was due. He really did have some animosity, but they took care of it in the ring as they should. And now everybody goes back and finds out what's going on. You know what I mean? And so I wanted to end the show really with a great opportunity that we got from Thompson Promotions and Banner Promotions. I threw a card out in Corona, California, and I got to get out there, sit on press row for the fight, and it was a great time to be had. There was a bunch of fights, and it was also being being shown on ESPN as their Friday night fights. And since it was fight week, it's really the start of the fight week, and it was on Thursday, and it was a pretty hot day, a pretty hot time, but it was a great time to be had by all. The first fight I saw was a fight by Richard Contreras out of Riverside, who ended up landing a very, very, very good body blow to the man that he was fighting, a game journeyman, but a journeyman nonetheless. Something to give. I believe Contreras had a rough outing in his prior fight, and so he used this fight as a kind of stepping stone to get him back on track. He didn't look really well both rounds, but he landed that blow, and he's known as a knockout artist. He had 8 knockouts going into that, so that was great to see that up-and-coming fighter out of Riverside. But when it got to the main card, the weather was great, and the first fight, which I felt was a great fight, was the fight between Miguel Gonzalez out of Cleveland, Ohio, and Miguel Acosta, the former WBA lightweight champion out of Venezuela. These guys are both kind of on the same track in that they both had lost some hard-fought decisions in prior fight, and this was basically to see if they're going to be ready for primetime in the future. And so a lot was on the line. Acosta came out looking, they both looked in tremendous shape, but right off the bat, Acosta looked like he was going to be the counterpuncher, and he was going to be the smart, kind of find his wily, crafty veteran, find his way there, because he really showed mobility. That kind of surprised me, but what he showed in mobility was definitely countered by Miguel Gonzalez with his ability to cut off the ring. Now, Miguel Gonzalez did not start the fight off very well. I gave him the first round, but he was knocked down in round 2 and really gave up rounds 3 and 4, rounds 3, and looking like he was going to start giving up rounds in a hurry. However, he came back with some hard punches in the fourth round that put him back into the fight. He put his competitor down in the fifth, and then followed that up with some really good work in the middle rounds that to me that got him back into the fight, even to the fight up going into the last 3 rounds, 8, 9, and 10, and I have him winning all 3 of those rounds. And it was a gritty, great fight in that Miguel Gonzalez showed that you deal with mobility by being able to cut off the ring. You can't say a guy's running away from you. It's your fault if you can't catch him. And what Miguel Gonzalez showed is that he wasn't going to be complaining about a guy running away from him. He's going to trap that guy. He's going to land the more effective blows, punches in bunches, landed it to the body beautifully, and landed some good combinations up top. And it was a really great fight to see a young kid come in there, really establish himself against a veteran that's shown himself to be crafty and really has fought some big fighters out there. You know, and it really sets up Miguel Gonzalez for the future. I was able to actually get an interview with Miguel Gonzalez after his, a little bit later on that night after his fight, and this is the interview that we were able to get.
My name is Luis Miguel from Cypher Boxing Network. I'm here with Miguel Gonzalez. He just got in a big fight with Miguel Acosta tonight over here in Corona, California. How you feeling after the fight?
Oh man, I feel great. You know, it was a great opportunity for me. I took advantage of it. Gave the crowd what they wanted, a great performance and a hard work fight, you know what I mean? So I feel great right now.
You know, you took a sneaky right hand punch in that second round and you went down. Were you hurt from that punch?
Not at all. Sneaky, off balance, flash knockdown. In fact, it was another punch later on that I felt But with that knockdown, no, it wasn't nothing that hurted me at all.
Yeah, it did seem like you reacted quite well from getting up from that knockdown. You kind of returned the favor. Did you feel that you hurt him early after that? Because it seemed like after that knockdown, you actually got a little bit more assertive and hurt him a little bit after that.
Yeah, I had to. He was a crafty veteran, a former world champion, and I knocked him down with a short left hand. I didn't throw with the intentions of knocking him down, but after that, I decided to put the pressure and throw more harder, solid shots, try to get him out of there. But again, he survived the fight, and he was a smart fighter.
Well, Acosta seemed to be very good with his footwork, but what I was impressed very much by you was your ability to cut off the ring. Is that something that you guys were planning on with Acosta, with him being so good with his lateral movement?
Exactly. That's something that we had to work in camp. And, we could have did a little more, but I watched the fight, and, Acosta had great foot movement. So it was something that needed to be done, to cutting off the ring and digging with the body shots, short shots, and try to get him out of there. But again, he survived. I'm glad to come out with the victory.
Definitely congratulations on the win. What do you look forward to in the future?
Well, I heard in the ring from the promoter, July 26th, ESPN. So we're looking forward to something soon, a couple days off, and back in the gym.
All right, thanks a lot. And do you have anything to say to your fans on the West Coast?
No, actually, my fans is in Cleveland, Ohio. I have a lot to say. They supported me through it all. And, my pops, shout out to my pops, my mother, brothers, sisters, nieces and nephews, Nikki, and my daughter, Layla. And, they supported me through it all. And I can't wait to come back and get embraced by all the true supporters of Silky Smooth. All right. You can, email me, mgsilkysmooth@gmail.com. And, my Facebook, Miguel Silky Smooth Gonzalez. And, I have three pages, a personal athlete and a smooth group. You can see all my upcoming events and YouTube, and we're coming. We're coming.
All right. Yeah. All right. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks for the great fight.
Lewism, Cypher Boxing, and Miguel. Heyo. And that was Miguel Gonzalez. And it was really nice to hear him shout out his family, because that's, this is the toughest sport there is, man, getting punched in the face for a living. And that's the people you fight for, is your family. And he put it out there. That's who his real supporters are. And he fought for them. And he looked like the kind of guy that you're going to keep an eye on in the future, man. He grinded it out. There was some adversity. He got up. And that's what you want to see in a fighter, for them to get up and really get better after that. And that's what I saw. And that's what I think we're going to see in the future from him. And they opened up a card that had a guy by the name of Mauricio Herrera versus Ji-Hoon Kim. That turned out to be a great fight. A fight that ended up the way I thought it was going to end up, with Herrera really outclassing Kim. But with Kim, you always get a great fight, and he delivered. But Herrera was just too much, crafty as always. And a guy that I'm definitely going to be writing an article on him, because he's, to me, an enigma in the sport. And it's he's really at that crossroads of whether he wants to be an elite-level fighter or just a really good fighter. And I think he's shown himself to be the best at where he's at now. But I think he's got the ability to be more than an ESPN Friday Night Fight fighter. I think he can get back to Showtime, and he wants to fight, and I believe he can get Brandon Rios to do that. So we'll see what happens with Brandon Rios in the future. But two guys that are not and big props to the Banner Promotion and the Thompson Boxing Promotion event, ESPN Friday Night Fights. That press row was great, and it was great to see the fighters and really to cover the sport in my home area, Southern California, man. And what we're trying to do is get a spotlight on the golden era of what we feel is boxing at this time. And with boxers like Broner and Malignaggi, what they're going to do right now is basically talk us out. They've set themselves up to be the fighter of the future, and this might be the best buildup ever in the history of fights with these two guys that aren't short for words at any time. Before I get to this clip, I just want to say peace. Thank you so much. CrookedVision.com/boxing, CrookedVision.com/radio, KChungRadio.org. Support the rest of the shows on this beautiful station, and support boxing. And I'd like to thank my wife, Myra, for coming on board.
And thanks, everybody, for listening.
And thanks for everybody listening. And once again, man, Cypher Boxing. Peace.
I need to see it.
You got any press go back down to 140 after fighting 147?
Well, we don't look past no opponent. Even though I know I'm going to fuck Paulie up, that's what I'm worrying about.
All right, true. I mean, tell me about, did you see see anything in his face when you look at
him? He was scared. Y'all seen that? He thought he seen a ghost. And I ain't talking about Guerrero.
Peterson versus Matisse. How do you think that goes?
Man, good for your heart. Keep lying to yourself. You a pussy. I seen you. You a pussy. I know guys that fought you in the amateurs. They all know you pussy. When you get punched in your mouth, I want to see you talking like that.
Our boy Guzman said what up. The amateurs. Our boy Guzman, he said what up.
Yeah.
He beat you.
He beat you.